Side Hustle Show 173, how to turn your ideas into recurring revenue.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
What's up? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, your weekly dose of ideas, action, and results toward building job-free income streams. Got a great side hustle for you today, one that doesn't require a big upfront investment or even a ton of subject matter expertise. It's product licensing, where you can turn your ideas into recurring revenue. I'm joined by Stephen Key from InventRight.com, and he's going to share how you can get into this business even if you're idealist at the moment. You can download a free PDF highlight reel with all of Stephen's top tips from our conversation, and you can find the notes and links for this episode at sidehustlenation.com/invent. And we first covered product licensing back in episode 99 of the show, where Nate Dallas shared how licensing a game idea of his earned him and his brother $300,000 in passive income over the course of 10 years. It's just a fascinating business, and Stephen's got some great insights on how to get started. And before we dive in, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for today's episode. It's FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks is the affordable small business accounting software for side hustlers and freelancers with invoicing and time tracking built right in. Get started today with your 30-day free trial at FreshBooks.com/sidehustle. I'll be back to tell you a little bit more about FreshBooks, plus my top takeaways from this chat with Stephen after the interview. Alrighty, let's do it. Why is this a good time to get into product licensing?
Well, first of all, it doesn't require any capital. You don't have to set up a company. And there's so many companies out there that need us creative people. So they're looking for ideas. And every year, there's just more and more opportunity for us to submit ideas to companies and let them pay us royalties for everyone they sell.
So that's the basic business model, is saying, hey, I am the idea guy who we just had on the show, and I'm going to turn around and essentially sell that intellectual property to some company who can turn that into a product and make money off it.
Absolutely. You're basically renting your idea to a company.
Okay.
And they're going to pay you on everyone they sell. So you don't have to start a company. You don't have to worry about manufacturing or raising money or do any of those things. And what's really great about it, Nick, it's really speed to market today. Right. If you start a company, raise capital, all those type of things that you need to do to be successful, it takes a lot of time and effort. When you license an idea, you find that perfect partner that has relationships, distribution, money. They can put that your product on a shelf extremely, extremely quick.
I feel like people will come up with things and then that's where it'll stop because they don't know the next step down the road. And if that is, well, I'm going to need to find a manufacturer, or I'm going to need to raise money, and then it dies. So here's an alternative to not let it die, to let it live on and earn some royalties beyond that. So tactically, what's the first step in either if you have an idea or maybe trying to come up with an idea?
Great question. The first step is to really study the marketplace and to see if you do have a new idea. Now, I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel, but I do think you have to make a small improvement on an existing idea. But you have to first do a Google image search and see if there's any ideas that are similar to yours. And guess what? You will find similar ideas. That's perfectly fine. But know your uniqueness. So you do a Google image search, you become an expert in this micro category. The next thing you do a prior art search. Look for prior patents. Go to Google Patents, play around with it, put a couple words in there, learn how to search for patents. And guess what? You will find something similar to yours. I can guarantee it, but that's okay too.
Oh, so what's a prior art search?
You're looking for prior patents on your idea.
And this is like USPT.gov or something?
No, it's even simpler than that. You can go to the USPTO.gov. That's the United States Patent and Trademark Office. But better yet, just go to Google Patents. It's so much easier. And what's really fun about it, you'll just type in certain words and these patents will come up. And look at the drawings first and see how similar it is to your idea. But this is what you're going to discover. You're going to see the history of your idea. There'll be variations, of course. Now, if you find your idea exactly your idea, but the product isn't on the market yet, or maybe it will never be on the market, you can always call that inventor and say, hey, look, can I help license that idea? That's one way to do it. But I can tell you, once you start searching, you're going to discover a lot of patents out there. But make sure you find your uniqueness. So if you do those two things first and you discover, well, it's not on the market. And yes, I do have a unique idea because I did some prior art searching.
Okay.
Here's the catch. Then it's real simple. You need to reach out to these companies and show them your idea. It's as simple as that. Now, that being said, you need a little bit of protection, right? Because everybody's fearful, but you don't have to be.
Before we do the protection stuff, let's walk down the road of an example. Do you have something from either yourself or one of your students that would be a good example to illustrate what this search and improvement strategy looks like?
When I first started out, I had this one idea of, it's called a rotating label. I'd read where there's never enough information on containers for drug facts and warnings and things like that. And I thought, well, gee, I've got an idea to put more information on a container. I'm going to put a label down first, just like there's a label on cough syrup now.
Okay.
But I'm going to put another label on top of it. And the label on top of it is going to spin, and it has a little window. And as you turn it, it reveals all the information on the base label. So now you've increased your space for more information. Very simple idea. And I went down and built a prototype at Kinko's out of paper, and I did all that great stuff. And sure enough, I had called a company. It was Johnson & Johnson, submitted that idea to them. And the first thing out of their mouth is, you know, do you have a patent on it?
So did you just call up like their general like customer service hotline? Like how do you get in touch with these giant companies?
Well, this was a little bit different. I called in. You can always get to everybody, and I can talk about how to do that now because things have changed. It's easier now to get to people than it ever has been through social media. But in this situation, I called someone up in their graphics department that was doing their label design because I had a new label.
And how did you find them?
Well, I just called up and asked. I got the 800 number, asked for the corporate number. And when they put me into the corporate number, and I said, look, I'm a product developer, or I'd like to speak to someone in your graphics department. Now, the operator didn't know what to do.
Yeah, they're like, just get off my phone. Like, let me transfer you.
We're trying to move you as quick as you can.
Okay.
And they, sure enough, someone in the graphic department, he doesn't get calls very often. He didn't know what this call was even about. So I said, hey, I'm a product developer, and I can add 75% more space to your label. He was intrigued. He said, really? How are you going to do that? I said, well, let me send you a sample. And then he called me back and said, this is incredible. Do you have a patent on this? That's when I flipped out a little bit because I didn't understand that process.
What happened after that? So at that point, there was no patent.
No, there was nothing. I panicked. And that's what everybody does. And I don't want people to do that. But that's what I did. And I called this attorney. And first of all, he did a prior art search. This is what he did. And he didn't find anything. He says, Steve, you're an inventor. I said, fantastic. So I filed these two patents. And they ended up being worthless. Because I didn't do my homework. In fact, there was patents out there on this idea exactly. In fact, I thought I was an inventor. I was not an inventor. It had been patented 60 years ago. It cost me $30,000. Made a mistake. But guess what? That prior art, those prior patents of 60 years ago, they found my idea exactly. But when I read it, something was missing. There was no method of manufacturing. They had three claims. Claims are really the guts of a patent. I read the three claims, what they were claiming that was unique, and I read them, but no one described how to make it. So when I had a call from a big company like Johnson & Johnson, they're interested, and it's not on the market, and there's patents, what do you do? Well, there's a big gap, and that's getting back to your question. I looked at that big hole, even though I found the prior art. It told me what to do next. It told me that I needed to figure out how to make it. And today, I have 20 patents on that technology, and we've sold hundreds of millions of those labels, and that's why I live up in Lake Tahoe now.
Living the dream. Okay, so part of the patent can be like the product design itself, its functionality, but then a separate, even if it's like a very similar thing, if you make it differently, that could qualify for a separate patent?
Sure.
Okay.
What's amazing about patents, you can patent just the concept, okay, or the method of manufacturing. Or even how the product could be used. It's amazing. Once you start to dig in, you realize there's so many ways of protecting an idea. But here's the catch. Companies will license ideas from you without patents. It's not about patents. In fact, what it's about is just a good idea. It doesn't even have to be a great idea. It just needs to be a good idea. Most products that are on the shelf don't have patents. And guess what? Most products go in and out of the market so quick that if you waited for a patent, you might miss the market. So patents are not the answer to it anymore. They're not at all. It's really showing the company a good idea and letting them bring it to market. The best protection is being first.
Okay.
And if someone takes it, copies it, my comment is congratulations, you're selling a lot of product for someone to copy you.
So one of the things that is going on in our lives, we have a newborn, so we're going like on lots of like stroller walks and like I want a place to like hold my coffee like while I'm walking. So we've been through a couple different stroller attachment cup holder things, the little things that like dangle off of the handle there. So if I wanted to improve upon this or iterate on this somehow, what would be my step? Like go, so we bought these on Amazon. So we would go to Amazon and see if that particular thing has a patent or, you know, or look at the reviews or what?
Perfect. That's a great question. First thing you do is that study the marketplace and read the reviews on Amazon. You'll find something similar and see who's making the products. See who's your competition.
Okay.
And it's really not your competition. It's the companies you're going to show your invention to. So you're looking at them closely. Why is yours different? Why is yours better? Read the comments and then determine, hey, do I want to go forward? Do I have an opportunity? Is mine unique?
Okay.
Okay, perfect. And you decide, yes, mine is unique. Next thing you do, do a Google image search and type in cup holders on strollers. All right. And look around. You'll find a lot of them. But if you find them, just read them. Don't panic. But if you still haven't found yours exactly, bingo.
Okay.
Okay, there you go. Now you have an opportunity.
Do you have to build a prototype before you approach these companies? Like you mentioned, I made up my prototype at Kinko's. I sent it in.
It's so easy. You're going to fall out of your chair. Let me tell you how easy this is. No, you don't have to build a prototype. Not yet, anyway.
Okay.
You're going to create a sell sheet. It's a one-page advertisement of your product. And you're going to find someone on Fiverr or Upwork, some 3D computer-generated graphic that's living, who knows where he's going to look, you know, he's someplace. He's going to create this sell sheet for you. He's going to take your sketch on a napkin that you gave him, and he's going to make this 3D looks real, like you can order it. And he's going to do that for about $50. Okay, so now my idea just came to life. And you're going to put some benefit statement at the top, the big benefit of your idea.
Okay.
Drink coffee while running with the stroller and my child or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it doesn't leak. It holds a tall iced coffee with no problem or something.
Exactly. And so you're going to put a couple other features it might have. Easy to connect, fits on any stroller, whatever. And then you're going to put your contact information. That is the number one tool you need.
Okay.
Because you're selling a benefit.
And then I understand, okay, so I'm reaching out to the companies that are already manufacturing these. But what's to stop them from saying, hey, man, thanks for, you know, for doing our homework for us. Like, now we have your idea. We don't need you anymore.
Companies, because of something that's called open innovation, is that companies are relying on us to submit ideas to them. Now, this has been going on in the toy industry for 70 years, right? They count on toy inventors to submit ideas. In fact, once you start in that field, they will pester you for ideas. So they love you. And the minute they take your idea, that starts to get out and the doors shut down. So you're a free resource. They don't mind paying you a royalty on a product. Not at all. In fact, they would love to. I interviewed Alex Lee, the president of OXO, the big kitchen company.
Okay.
They have over 1,000 products. And he says, look, we love paying royalties. We love paying royalties. Because most of our products come from the outside, from people like you. Now, not all companies feel that way. You got to find the companies that are inventor-friendly, right? The real big mega companies, forget these guys. Because they're going to say, look, you need to have a patent. But the truth be told, you don't need one. Because it's not about protection, it's about selling.
How do you tell if the company is inventor-friendly or not?
Depends on how they treat you. If they're really big, big companies just aren't friendly.
As a general rule.
Yeah. Go to the mid-sized guys. They will love you. So you build a relationship. You ask them what their process is. Ask them what do they need. And you send them the sell sheet. It's so easy today. Most of these companies have an online submission forms.
Really?
You don't even have to pick up the phone anymore. First of all, you find the company you like. And how do you do that? Go down to where your product's going to be selling. If it's going to be selling at Walmart or Target or Toys R Us, Babies R Us, go down there and look at all the products. And those, and find where yours is going to sell. And those are the companies that you're going to reach out to. Now, just to be on the safe side, type in the name of the company, type in complaints and lawsuits and see if they're having any problems.
Okay.
Really simple. things have changed so much in the last couple of years. You don't even have to call companies up anymore. Go to LinkedIn, type in the name of the company, and you're going to find someone in sales, marketing, or new product development. Reach out to them, tell them you're a product developer. Never say you're an inventor. In their minds, they know it. Crazy inventors. I know we all are. So send them a quick note. Don't send them a link. Don't tell them who you are and what you've done. It doesn't matter. Just say, look, I'm a product developer. I'd like to submit an idea to your company. What is your process? That's all. And they'll say exactly what they do, who to contact. Now you've got a name.
Okay.
Right. So now it's not even cold calling. I tell everybody, you don't have to be a salesperson. Your product needs to sell itself. And it does that with the sell sheet. You're just delivering your idea to companies. You're like the FedEx man. Here's my idea. Here's my idea. Here's my idea. And you do it to as many companies as you can.
Okay, that was the next question. Do you cast a really wide net, like on week one, or do you say, okay, this is my dream company. I'm going to, you know, give them a month to get back to me, or like just blast it out as far as I can?
Blast it out. No, you don't want to wait, because you've protected your idea with the provisional patent application. It's called a PPA. You can file it yourself. And in most situations, it's only $65.
Versus whatever, like tens of thousands to get like an actual patent.
See, the old way, now that let me explain why things have changed. The old way, I'm going to build a prototype. I'm going to file expensive patents. And then maybe after about a couple of years, I'm going to contact a company or start my own company to see if anybody wants to buy it.
So this is once you have provisional patent application, this is where you see like patent pending on like every product?
Yes.
For $65. Okay.
And I wrote a book just on that topic, because you have to write one that has perceived ownership.
Okay. This doesn't actually give you like any protection, but it kind of gives the perception like, hey, I'm serious about this.
No, it's a great tool. You can put patent pending. No, it's the right thing to do. Okay. Because it gives you 1 year to investigate, to maybe file an additional provisional patent application. Now, it's not a patent. It's a provisional patent application. The USPTO, which that's who you'd file it with electronically, they're not even going to open it up. But it gives you a date. That's what's important, is that date. Provisional patent applications is the number one tool of why companies are licensing ideas from people. And I see licensing agreements every week now. There's no patents, not at all. So that's why this is easy for anybody to do anywhere in the world. You can file a PPA anywhere in the world in the United States. You can submit it to companies online. Easy to do. File a PPA for $65. There you go. Build my sell sheet for $50. I'm into it $100.
This is actually really interesting, because we've been talking a lot on the show. One of the hottest side hustles of the past couple of years is the Amazon FBA business, a fulfillment by Amazon, like private labeling. I'm going to find a product that's selling. And if you go back in the archives, Greg Mercer has a really detailed criteria of what he looks for to find a hot moving product and, you know, make some tweak to it. Like he gave the example of like, hey, there was this bag that was doing really well. It had a plastic buckle. Everyone was complaining about it in the reviews. I'm going to make the exact same thing, but with a metal buckle, and, you know, charge a little bit more, and everybody loves it. But there's still like a big investment risk there. You're tying up a ton of capital just in ordering this inventory and having that sit in Amazon's warehouse, versus here's kind of an alternative, or maybe a lower risk alternative, saying, hey, this is my idea, and who wants to sell it for me? After you kind of do this initial contact, what comes next, or what's the deal look like in terms of royalty percentage, in terms of like how do you tell a good deal from a bad deal?
Well, first of all, let's go back to that. I can guarantee most situations you'll make more money if you license it. And people have a hard time understanding that, because if you license it to the right company that's got great distribution and you're doing it yourself on Amazon, right? Look at the numbers, because you'll get a 5% is pretty average, right? 5% is pretty average. And you're not doing anything. You're not floating the money, like you said, right? You're not inventorying it. There's no risk. So think about it. If you've got a company that's in 20, 30, 40, 50,000 stores and they're selling so quick, that 5% looks pretty darn good.
And you don't have to do any of the marketing. Some big company is taking care of it for you, versus on Amazon. Like, yeah, you're tapping into their platform, but there's still, you know, you're going to drive traffic and give units away for reviews and kind of seed the funnel a little bit.
It takes so much money. I started a company with guitar picks, and we made different shaped guitar picks. I became a Disney licensee with Mickey Mouse. We did skulls. And we did about $1 million a year in guitar picks. That's a lot of little pennies, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
And it took about $250,000 to start that thing up.
Wow.
People have no idea, just with the guitar picks, because you're right. We became a Walmart supplier. And just to do the float from when we had to buy it to collect that invoice on it took about 60, 90 days.
It's really, really capital intensive.
Yeah. And then you're building a couple months of inventory before you know it, you got $500,000-$600,000 floating around. It's very different. Most people don't understand that. But licensing, like getting back to your question, what is a good deal? A good deal is when they're selling a lot of product. That's a good deal. An average royalty is about 5%. What's really more important is make sure it has minimum guarantees, meaning that they have to sell X amount. If not, you get it back. It's your best protection.
What do you mean by that?
It's really easy. Most companies are going to want an exclusive. All right, we see your idea. We're going to take it. We're going to spend all our money, but we want an exclusive. So make sure they've got a lot of stores, right? Make sure they're the right partner for you.
Okay. So I sent it out. So I sent my sell sheet out to 5 or 10 different companies. You know, maybe I got a couple of responses. The one person is pretty serious about it, or one company is pretty serious. They say, okay, we want to do this. We want an exclusive deal.
They'll say, we want a worldwide exclusive. It's amazing how greedy these guys get. But basically, you want them to be greedy. Okay, so great. Now, what you're going to do is that you're going to add up all the stores that they're in, and you're going to do the math. They're going to sell one a week. If they don't sell one a week, it's going to get kicked to the curb at retail. So now you've done the math. You know, they're in 25,000 stores, and they're going to sell one a week. So that's, you know, 100,000 a month.
Would they tell you how many stores they're expecting distribution in, or you just have to guess?
Well, you don't have to guess. Just ask them, what stores are you in?
Okay.
So now you realize, wow, they're going to sell, you know, a couple million units a year, easy. My royalties on the wholesale price. And so now I've got an estimate of what I'm going to make, right? So now I'm going to give you an exclusive. Now, if I give you exclusive and I don't have any type of performance clause, I just gave it to you for free.
Yeah.
So I have to have some type of minimum that you have to sell. If you don't sell it, maybe you get bored with it. Maybe you do a lousy job. Hey, I need to get it back. So you set the minimum guarantees. The first year, very, very low. Second year's a little higher. And then the third year, you hit them between the eyes with it. Make sure they're doing a good job.
And this is on, you know, number of unit sales or like money in your pocket?
So it really comes, the rotating label that I just mentioned, the minimum guarantees were $750,000 for me. They had to sell with royalties coming to me. They had to sell that much.
So, okay, now this is free for you to license to somebody else.
Yes. And guess what? They paid for all the patents too.
Oh, okay.
So they paid for 13 patents. They went in a different direction. They gave it all back to me after 5 years. So then I licensed it to another company. I've been doing that for 20 years.
Oh, okay.
It's a fun game. It's really fun. Even when they mess up, it's even fun. Because then you get it back, find somebody else to take it. It's interesting. But what I like about it, you can kind of design your life. See, it's a different mindset. Live where you want to live and work as hard as you want to. It takes time to get started. And like anything else, you have to dive into it, right? And, yeah. And there's things to do to be successful. You have to educate yourself. But the trick is come up with a lot of ideas and submit them to a lot of companies.
Kind of casting that wide net, kind of a shotgun approach at the beginning. Do you have any like brainstorming exercise? I know we just did a full episode with Don, the idea guy, who had, you know, some really cool ideas for, you know, making sure you turning yourself into an idea machine and practicing this creative practice each day. But just wanted to get your take on it as well. Like, what's your brainstorming session look like? Or how are you coming up with these ideas?
Well, that's wonderful. I used to tell my wife I can go outside and pluck an idea from my apple tree any day I want. And the way you do that, it is discipline. To me, it's I play games that allow me to question things and be curious and look at things differently. And by playing those games, that child comes out of what if, or you just have the freedom to be silly. You have the freedom to think differently. And you can apply those same games to, I don't care, tennis shoes, toasters, doesn't matter. I can apply the same thought process. It's a way of coming up with variations and looking at things very, very differently.
Are we talking like mental games? Or are we talking like Monopoly?
Well, I'll give you an example. I love to play basketball. I've been playing basketball all my life. And I had this little Nerf basketball game in my office. But it had a square little backboard. It was plastic. It was from Ohio Art. And then they had the license of Michael Jordan. So it had a little sticker of Michael. It's really teeny. Mm-hmm. Well, I love Michael Jordan. So I went down and bought a poster and put the poster of him on the back of the backboard. So it wasn't square anymore. You see, I just changed the shape.
Okay.
That was one variation. What can you change? Well, why does it have to be square? It doesn't. Sure. Why does it have to be white? No, let's put graphics. Why does it have to be plastic? No, let's put cardboard. Let's lower the cost. Okay. Why does it have to be in a box? Well, it doesn't. It could be in a clamshell. So I did all those things, sent it to Ohio Art. 3 days later, I had a notice back. They loved it. It sold for 10 years.
Wow.
That prototype, I think, cost probably $10. First year was $100,000 in royalties.
Wow.
Yeah, it happens all the time. And so what's really amazing, and I think what's really important, people have to realize that creative muscle, you have to be disciplined to exercise it because we're all creative. So I just found a game to play. And that one game I just talked about, what if? What if I change the shape? What if I add sound to it? What if? What if? What if? And I started changing it, right? And there's all these other games to play. But once you realize how to do that, you're looking for variations. You're trying to come up with something new and different. You're trying to find how to improve upon it. And once you practice that, you can do it whenever, wherever you want.
I like it. Really cool business idea, Stephen. Thank you for joining me. Is there anything else that, you know, very, very newbies to this business model, like, or what question am I not asking that I should probably quiz you on before I let you go?
No, I think you've asked some really great questions. I think before you do anything, educate yourself, right? And do that with podcasts or do that with books or do that with, better yet, find someone that's doing it. And ask them, get as close as you can to that individual. Suck all that information out of them. That's what you want to do. Ask a lot of questions. Be curious.
Fair enough. All right. It's InventRight.com and InventRight TV on YouTube. Stephen, thanks so much for joining me. We'll wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Stay young. Stay curious. Get a lot of exercise and dance.
Dance, baby. All right. Sounds good, man. Thanks so much. And we'll catch up with you soon.
This edition of The Side Hustle Show is brought to you by FreshBooks.com. Now, any successful entrepreneur will tell you that time is one of their most valuable commodities. And actually, managing time or the constant lack of it was the number one reported challenge facing Side Hustle Nation in my recent member survey. So our friends at FreshBooks intimately recognize this struggle and have built some really cool time-saving tools right into their award-winning accounting software. FreshBooks is a super simple cloud accounting service that's giving thousands of side hustlers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs like you the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. I originally turned to FreshBooks to invoice a writing client of mine so I could save on the PayPal fees, but they've got a lot more going on under the hood. For example, you'll find auto billing for recurring payments, late payment fees and reminders, time tracking and expense tracking built right in. Just take a picture of your receipt and automatic bank statement imports. So it all under the idea of trying to make it easy come tax time. And if you have questions, help is free forever. You can always count on the FreshBooks support rock stars to go above and beyond whenever you need a hand. To try FreshBooks completely free for 30 days, go to freshbooks.com/sidehustle or enter the Side Hustle Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/sidehustle for your free 30-day trial. Okay, so my top takeaways from this conversation with Stephen. Number one is, if you're looking for ideas, he says Amazon reviews are the largest free focus group on the planet. You can find some inspiration in there for certain. Number two is the concept of being an inventor seems really daunting, at least to me. Like, I have this vision of like the mad scientist like locked up in his lab, and maybe that's why Stephen prefers the term product developer instead. But the truth is, most inventions are iterative and evolutionary rather than revolutionary. And what I mean by that is, or maybe they combine two things that haven't been combined before. Like, even examples like Tesla. Like, we've had batteries for years, and we've had cars for years, maybe batteries, maybe not to that capacity, but they had yet to be combined in that fashion. So takeaway number three is the idea that manufacturing is inherently difficult, but licensing is simple. Like, let somebody else that already has the manufacturing expertise handle it, and, you know, then take care of the marketing stuff too. So if you're looking, for example, at the Amazon FBA business, like we talked about, but you're intimidated by the startup costs, like, oh, I've got a 500 quantity minimum order, and these things are going to cost $10 a piece landed. All of a sudden, that's $5,000. So licensing appears to be a lower risk alternative with some great upside as well. And Stephen even said, hey, you're going to set yourself up to make
way, way more if you get it in the hands of the right company and they can really sell this thing through their existing distribution channels. So those are my top takeaways from the call, but I'm here curious to hear yours. In fact, I'm going to give away a copy of Stephen's book, One Simple Idea, to a random commenter at sidehustlenation.com/invent. So head over there to drop in your top takeaway from the episode from this episode for a chance to win a free copy of Stephen's best-selling book on product licensing. That's sidehustlenation.com/invent. And of course, while you're there, you'll be able to download the free PDF highlight reel with all of Stephen's top tips from the call as well. That's it for me. I got to go pack. We're off to Tokyo tomorrow for a little vacation / digital nomading. A 9-hour flight with a 3-month-old. I'll have to let you know next week if that was a horrible idea. But thank you guys so much for listening. I absolutely love putting together the show each week, and it makes just makes my day that you choose to spend some time with me in your earbuds. Until next time, let's go out there, make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.